Okay, thank you so much, everybody. First of all, does everybody have a source sheet I passed around? I don't know if there are enough. I wasn't expecting such a large crowd.
Sorry, I warned
you. I can also, if there aren't enough, I can also email it to you. I have it. Okay, I also have it digitally.
Does anyone not have a source sheet?
Okay. I also, in addition to thanking the Sagirs and also Ravelli for organizing, I want to thank Yitz, because a few weeks ago Yitz came over to me and said, "So have you started yet?" I had no idea what he was talking about, but I wasn't even on my radar yet. So thank you, Yitz, for getting me going with this. So as many of you know, I like to try and do is take 10 ideas from the Haggadah to go through, and I give you a cheat sheet, so you know you could either ignore me and just read the cheat sheet and then space out, or you know, just so that you have when you get to the Haggadah a week from now, kind of to jog your memory of what we talked about. You want to say something, Sean?
Yeah, just one quick thing. All the cakes are kosher Pesach, so the numbers are not. Yeah.
Okay. So starting with number one. So. The concept that we have in the Haggadah, the Machlokes in Pesachim, Rav and Shmuel, about what is the Gnus, what is the Gnut, what is the degradation, either that our forefathers were idol worshippers or that we were slaves in Egypt. But the concept itself, Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Harav from its inception, a very close colleague of Rav Kook, he asks, what is this concept in general of matzil b'gnut sayim b'shvach? Why do we even have this concept? Why do we start off with the negative and work towards the positive? So he says that there's a difference between looking forward to something, like anticipating something, what he refers to as a tzipia, and wanting something, a ratzon. And he says that he doesn't say this, but imagine. You know, if you were outside all day in the heat and the sun, you know, working in your garden, or well, that, maybe not this year, but you know, you were outside and it was really hot, right? So when you would really look forward to a cold shower that night, right? Like that's a CPA. That's not just CPA. That's a ratzon. Like you really want cold shower. You know, if you just go about your regular day, so to have a cold shower at the end of the day, it may not be a ratzon, but that's, you know, so you're looking forward to it. You know, at the end of the day, you're going to get to the shower. So he says, Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap says, in terms of the slavery, we start with the gnus, that we were slaves, that our fathers were idol worshippers, and it's so, we feel it. We feel the slavery, we feel how down we are, and that makes us transform from that just anticipating the geula, but to really wanting it, because we feel like we're slaves. And it reminded me of a story. I don't remember all the details. I remember the details of the story. There was once a Rebbe that had was talking with his Talmid, and he said to them, "If I told you that right now Mashiach is coming, you know, are you guys ready to go to Eretz Yisrael with me?" And this Talmidim look around, they say, "Well, yeah, you know, of course." He said, "Really, really ready to go?" They said, "Yeah, but, you know, we have to go home first and talk to our wives and, you know, make sure that they're okay with it." So, side note, in general, it's a good idea to consult with your wives before doing big things. But when Mashiach is coming, so, you know, you what?
I think that was Dari.
Dari?
Wasn't the story just like, it was Friday?
Yeah, it was Friday, it was like 5 minutes for Shabbos,
something like that. Like, you can go with me to Yerushalayim for Shabbos.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's the same stories you're talking about.
It could be. I didn't remember all the details of the story, but the general idea. And so he said, "Okay, go home, talk to your wives," and they go leave. And then he goes outside the building, and there's an old man with a whitish gray beard standing there, and he puts his arm around him, and he starts crying. He says, "I'm sorry, but they're not ready for you yet." And that was Mashiach. And so it reminded me of this, because I think it's the same point that, you know, that the students, clearly, if you'd ask them, you know, "Mashiach coming, we're going to Yerushalayim." "Yeah, yeah, yeah, we're going to Yerushalayim, we're going to Eretz Yisrael." And you know, but they didn't have that rut zone. If they really had the rut zone, the second he said, "We're going, you know, Mashiach is coming, we're going," they're there. So that's the first idea. Second idea, moving into Halach Ma'anya. So Rav Soloveitchik says that, you know, in general, when we talk about Halach Ma'anya, we think about right, physical needs, right? If somebody needs food, somebody needs the Karban Pesach. But Rav Soloveitchik points out that it's not only about the meeting one's physical needs, but when we invite guests into our homes, we're also inviting them in. We're inviting in new ideas. You know, it's not just the physical person meeting physical needs, but inviting in new ideas. And he says that we see this based on Avraham and his openness in his home. Rav Soloveitchik, this is from the Night That Unites Haggadah of Goldschneider. I used that a lot last year. Remember, it's a very good Haggadah. Rav Soloveitchik says, welcoming guests is not only kindness whereby we provide food and shelter to those in need, it also reflects openness to new ideas and a willingness to explore other perspectives. So why was the quality of welcoming strangers so important to Avram's house? Because this quality reflects a spiritual attitude towards others. When a Jew senses that he's far from perfection, they cannot always show others the way. They lack intelligence and understanding that others can tell him something new. Then the door is open to others. But he goes on to say that when he thinks that he's right and he can't err at all, so then he's, you know, what's the point of even doing Hachnas Asorchim, laying in the other, because I know best, I don't need to hear from other people or meet other people or hear what they have to say. So that's the halach line, inviting people in. And just to dovetail that in the next source, moving to Maisiv Reb Lazar, so Rav Kook says, why did they have to get together, the Talmid, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Nazaria, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon, to discuss the Leil HaSeder, right? And seemingly they may have had their own families to be with, or Talmidim, or other people to be with. Why specifically are they getting together to learn there? And he says that it shows the importance of having, you know, learning Torah, like the Gemara in Bracha says, learning Torah is important. Not, you know, learning by yourself is not. The Gemara is very pro learning in group, learning in chavrusa, learning in group, because by hearing other people's perspectives, you're able to learn more, you're able to sharpen your own ideas by giving the back and forth in terms of hearing ideas, and it really opens you up to a whole new world of understanding. And to develop appreciation for other opinions. So that's perhaps, you know, two ideas of why we're inviting people to our Seder, and to discuss, not only inviting them to partake physically, but also to hear their ideas and be open to new ideas. Okay, now it's time for a story. A few weeks ago, I told some of you, I went to record some ideas from Rav David Lau, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi, to share with the rabbis. Part of my work for Yeshiva University is helping provide resources and continuing education for the rabbis. So at the end of the ideas that he was sharing, he shared a very inspiring story that he told when his father, Yisrael Meir Lau, when Rav David Lau was growing up, his father used to lead many communal sedarim. And one year he was leading a seder for families that had lost a loved one in the Independence War or in the Yom Kippur War. This was in 1974, he said. So it was, you know, just a half a year after Yom Kippur War. And his father, before the Seder, said to the kids, you know, usually I try and get everybody in the crowd to participate. I really am going to need your help this year, more so than ever. So, you know, I need you to step up to the plate. And so the kids were all, you know, proud and, you know, that our father needs our help to run the Seder. And so they get to the Seder and it's just tears, crying. Everybody, the whole room, huge room. All these families and a really broad range of people, and they start the Seder and nobody's really joining in, participating or singing, and the kids are singing with him by themselves, and they get to the Manishtana and the kids are saying the Manishtana, nobody else really wants to participate, and they get up to the beginning of Magid Halach Ma'anya, and Rav Yisrael Meir Lau gets up and says, listen everybody, you know, there are people, and I've told a similar story about this first thing before, maybe a year or two ago, you might remember. He said, there are people in other parts of the world, you know, and this was in the 1970s, the Iron Curtain of the USSR, the Soviet Union. There are other people that want to be in Eretz Yisrael, but can't be here, right? There are people that are in Eretz Yisrael already, but are choosing not to come here to the Seder tonight. He said, but there are also times like now where you want people to come to the Seder but you can't have them come to the Seder. You want your loved ones to come to the Seder but they can't be here to join with us. And he said that the only way to be able to try and bring them to the Seder is to make a Seder, to come to the Seder, to have a Seder. Without even having a Seder, there's no opportunity for them to even try and come. And he said, when we say Hashta Hacha L'shana Ba Ba'arad Yisrael, this is what we're saying, that Hashta Hacha, this year we are here, we're here at our Seder, and the loved ones that we want to be here may not be able to be here. L'shana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael, but we have Emunah Shlema, the Mashiach will come, and that next year they will be here with us after Tchiyas HaMesim in Eretz Yisrael at our Seder. And so he said that after that, Rav David Lau tugged on his father's coat and said, you know, he's 10 years old at the time, he said, maybe we should sing some folk Israeli songs, you know, to get everybody into it. So he starts singing, Hine Matovu Manayim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. And everybody starts joining slowly, slowly singing with him, and they sing a few more songs. And the crowd, it's broken the barrier, and the crowd's starting to get into it. And they're about to start going on with the Seder, and an older couple gets up and says, Rabbi, we have to tell you that since our son died in the Independence War in 1948, we haven't had a Seder, we haven't gone to a Seder. This is the first time since then that we've gone to a Seder, and we just want to say, thank you. And they sit down. And they continue on with the Seder. And David Lau says that every year when he leads a Seder now, he always looks around the table and remembers this Seder, and remembers and reminds himself how grateful and thankful we have to be to Hashem, both of what we have and who we have with us, and for those that are not there, that we hope, as his father said, that Munah Shlema, that they will come back and will be able to join us in the coming year at the Seder. Okay, moving on now to the Arba Banim. Rav Yaakov Moshe Karlap, if you haven't noticed, that's my new Haggadah for the year. So, nice Haggadah. They reprinted. It's a small pamphlet of his Haggadah, Mei Marom, and they reprinted it and took a number of other works of his from the Mei Marom from all different places and put together as a Haggadah. So he two ideas of his about the Chacham and the Rasha. So he says in terms of the Chacham. So first of all, he points out, it's interesting, if you look in the Psukim in the Torah, so the Chacham, when it talks about the Chacham, the way the Psukim talk, it makes it sound like either the Chacham is not yet in Eretz Yisrael, or if he is already in Eretz Yisrael, he's addressing his parents, you know, to the times when they were not in Eretz Yisrael yet. And basically what the Chacham is saying is, I understand, you know, ma'idus v'chukim v'mishpatim, he's saying, I understand in Eretz Yisrael, you know, there's value to the mitzvos. It makes sense. You know, that's the Gemara in Ksuva says, whoever has, whoever lives in Eretz Yisrael, yesh la elokai, and whoever doesn't live, right, it's like, hilu ovdi avodah zara. So, but, and a lot of the mitzvos, right, a lot of the mitzvos are only midoraisa in Eretz Yisrael. In chutz laretz, they're midrabanan, and you know, there's a difference there. So what's the purpose of doing mitzvos not in Eretz Yisrael? And so we answer him. What do we answer him? We say, "Ein maftir nach ein va'afata morlo kilchas haPesach ein maftir nach har Pesach avikom." We say that you can't eat after you eat the Karban Pesach. What does that really mean? So Rei Charlap says we're telling him, remember the first Karban Pesach that they had in Mitzrayim. And when they were there, they were not yet in Eretz Yisrael, but the Targum Yonasan, when talking about the Jews eating the Karban Pesach Mitzrayim, and this is really Rav Yaakov Charlap's explanation of the Targum Yonasan, because I saw he was reading into it a lot, but at least how he understood the Targum Yonasan is that the Jews, when they were eating that Karban Pesach, they may not have been in Eretz Yisrael, but by eating the Karban Pesach, it was leaving a taste in their mouths of the Tom of Eretz Yisrael, the Tom of what the Karban Pesach represents, of the Beis HaMikdash and being offered in Eretz Yisrael, something that's only done in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore we're saying to him, they wanted to leave that taste of Eretz Yisrael in their mouths as long as possible, and that's why the Jews in Eretz Yisrael are brethren, they're not in Chutz Laretz, they're not Zocha to be in Eretz Yisrael, do mitzvos even though it may be in Chutz Laretz. It may not have the same value as the mitzvos in Eretz Yisrael, but they're doing it so that they have the taste of Eretz Yisrael in their mouths. So they have that connection to Eretz Yisrael with them. And that's what we're telling the Chacham. However, by the Rasha, and really the other three children, it comes after the psukim that says pasuk says okay, I can't find it now, but the psukim are talking about after you've come into Eretz Yisrael, that this is what your children will ask you. This is what you tell them. So the Rasha is asking this question. He's already in Eretz Yisrael, Ki'ilu, and he's asking this question. What ma'avura is this? What are these mitzvahs that you're doing in Eretz Yisrael? In contrast to the Chacham, the Rasha is in Eretz Yisrael. He says, I don't even understand the mitzvahs you're doing in Eretz Yisrael. What are you doing these mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael for? And Rav Yaakov Chalap says, that's why he's a Rasha. Because he doesn't even get in Eretz Yisrael the value of the mitzvos. But you know what we say to him? We say, if you would have been in Mitzrayim, then you would have, you know, game over. You would have been done. However, now that you're in Eretz Yisrael, you have a chance. Because the heir of Eretz Yisrael, just being in Eretz Yisrael, has the ability to affect a person. And we see that so many people that come to Eretz Yisrael searching, looking for themselves, and this is the place where they find themselves. So that's the Russia, even though he may be a Russia for saying that, but Bezrat Hashem, by being in Eretz Yisrael, it will impact him. Okay, number six, by Hisham Legoy, and this is the part of the Haggadah which everybody flies through, and so I was trying to find one small thing from there to talk about. So it's saying that they were a great nation. What does that mean, that they were a nation? Hayu Mitzuyanim Sham, that they were distinct. And the Medrash says that because they were distinct, or that was either because they wore different clothing, they had different language, they had different names. Because of that, they were zocha to the geula, to be redeemed. Right? But the Rav Menachem Kasha in Torah Shlema quotes a Yerushalmi that offers another explanation. It's actually named Moshe commenting on the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says the pasuk in Va'era, according to the pasuk in Va'era, right? It says, Hashem tells Moshe and Aaron, go and command Bnei Yisrael, et paro melch Mitzrayim, lo'tzi et Bnei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. Go command Bnei Yisrael, and also paro, and tell paro to let the Jews go out. So it doesn't really say what Hashem told them to command Bnei Yisrael. So the Yerushalmi says, what did he command them? He commanded them about sending your slave to go free. So what does that mean? You're sending your slave to go free. Where they were slaves. What slave? What do you mean? Send your slaves to go free. So the Pnei Moshe says that, as strange as it may sound, that the slaves, the Jews themselves, the Jewish slaves, they themselves had slaves. And I guess there was, you know, even within the slavery hierarchy, there, you know, there are higher slaves and lower slaves. And the Pnei Moshe says that it was in the merit of these slaves letting their slaves go free, that they merited to be redeemed, which is just another interesting idea, which I had never heard before, of why they merited to be redeemed. And Rav Nachum Kasher adds to that that it's a lesson for us that in order to be able to before we can merit freedom, we ourselves can no longer be acting as masters over people. I mean, we can only truly merit freedom if you're willing to give freedom to somebody else. You can't say, I want freedom, but, you know, then be hovering over somebody else. So I thought maybe that's also why we start Magi with in Halach Maaniyah, Kol Dichvin Yetzei V'Yekol. What we're saying is, you know, everybody, whether you're the poor person on the street, whether you're the servant in the kitchen, everybody's coming around the same table. It's breaking the barriers of hierarchy. Everybody, we're all the same, right? There's no more distinction between us. And in that merit, we're able to continue on with the geula and talking about the Sipur Yitzhiyat Mitzrayim. Okay, here's an original. You guys can let me know what you think. So, we say three times in the Haggadah, B'chol Dor V'Ador. Any guesses what they are?
What?
Good, good. Okay, V'hish Amda, B'chol V'Ador, Omdim Aleinu L'chal Oseinu, El HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilim Liyadam, that they rise up against us and Hashem saves us. Good. What were we saying, Josh? Or Steve? Oh, John? Good, good. Every generation, a person has to view themselves as if they went out of Egypt. Okay, those are the two easier ones. What about the third one? Okay, we say it every Shabbos. Okay, I'll tell you because I'm running out of time. Okay, in the end of Hallel, which is after Nishmas, before Yishtabach, we say Machlod Rivod Amcha Beisrael Brina Yisbar Shimcha Makin Mechol Dor Vador. Now, if you're a Sephardi, where Shlomo, then you don't say. I looked in the Sephardi Siddur trying to find this. I couldn't find it. Then we like Sephardim don't add that. And it's in Brina. Well, oh, Shlomo is there. Yeah. Oh, okay then. So that's really that we're praising Hashem for what He does for in every generation. So I was thinking that perhaps. What does Bechol Dor Vador mean? So literally it means in each and every generation. But I thought perhaps Al Pidrush, you could say Bechol Dor Vador is a symbolic of the Mesorah, of transmission from one generation to the next. And these three things represent Hashem always saving us, Visha Amda, right? Visha Amda, that they always stand up against us. But what's the end? Hashem will save us, right? So that's number one, is transmission. These are all cornerstones of Judaism in terms of the transmission. That Hashem will always save us. Two is Yitziat Mitzrayim, right? The Bechol Dor Vador, Chai Vadam Leros Asmo Kilu Hu Yatzam Mitzrayim, which is fundamental because we have it in Kriya Shema, we have it in Kiddush, we have it in parts of Davin, we have it. It's really a tenet of Judaism. And thirdly is Hakara Satov and thanking Hashem. And these three things are like cornerstones of Judaism, therefore that's why it was so important to kind of pass it on as Mesorah on this night of transmitting to others. And if you'll ask, well, what about Torah? Torah is like the greatest Mesorah, right? So I sort of thought maybe that's like the Rambam. Where's the Rambam's mitzvah of Yishu Eretz Yisrael? And the famous, I think it's Megillas Esther that says, It's an underlying principle. How can you have all these mitzvot yishuv ha'aretz without a mitzvah of yishuv ha'aretz? A mitzvah of tluyuv ha'aretz without a mitzvah of yishuv ha'aretz. So perhaps here too, the Torah itself, the transmission of Torah Shebaal Peh, the Mesorah, that is an underlying principle does not need to be mentioned. Okay, Az Yashir, even though we mentioned it last year, 2 years ago, that Az Yashir, what?
The original one.
Oh, you like that? Okay, thank you. The Az Yashir is not mentioned in the Haggadah, interestingly enough, but at least we allude to it. So there's a nice idea, another nice idea by Rav Soloveitchik. If you look in the Torah, and for whoever hasn't had seen in the Torah or had an Aliyah, it's kind of broken up like with breaks. And every Shira in the Torah is broken up like that. And so Rav Soloveitchik says, why is that? Because when we give thanks to Hashem, we do so by using words and song. However, there are times that we find there are no words that can possibly capture and express the emotion we are feeling in our heart. The empty spaces represent a song without words. There are times when we're at a loss for words, literally. And that's why Rav Soloveitchik says, again, Al Pidrush, why is there space in the Shira, in the song? It's also good to use for the seventh day of Pesach, so if you don't use it, the Haggadah. Okay, number 9, Echad Miyodea. So Rav Moshe Weinberger said, we say at the end of the Haggadah, they sing Echad Miyodea. Rav Moshe Weinberger says that everything that we're doing up until Pesach, the cleaning for Pesach, the Bedikas Chametz, the burning the Chametz, the Arba Kosos, Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, everything is all leading up to one purpose, to get to the point of Echad Miyodea and be able to know Echad Aniyodea Echad Elokeinu Shebashamayim Va'aretz, to be able to get to that point where you recognize Hashem is one. And he quoted the Gateshead Rosh Yeshiva Rav Avram Gurwitz, who said that a lot of people like to play word associations. You say a word, and what's the first thing that pops into your head? And so he says a similar idea, that the avoda of Pesach is to get to the point where somebody says to you one, and you say, jump up and you say, oh, one is Hashem, right? Like one is Hashem, one is Hashem. And so on and so forth. And he tells a famous story with the Bnei Yitzchar, Yeli Malch Shapiro, that he used to go around to see the Jews, the simple Jews, Siddarim, and he went with his Hasidim. He was standing under the window, and they heard the simple Jew saying, Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha, like people say for Shema, enunciating the Dalet. And the Talmidim started chuckling, this Amar Arzi doesn't know what he's doing. And the Bnei Saskar said, what are you mocking him for? This simple Jew, in the night of Pesach, is able to infuse, even within the Rasha, the ability to see oneness of Hashem, to see the yichud of Hashem. As we get to the end of the Seder and everybody's already falling asleep, and it's important not to belittle it and make after four cups of wine also, is that? but maybe dafka after four cups of wine, to be able to see so clearly Hashem's oneness and recognize that is really the avoda, the night of the Seder. And just to finish, and since I think my time is up, I'll just reference in less than a minute, because I make a plug for the Torah to Go, that Torah to Goes. I wrote an article this year about Lashana Abab Yerushalayim, connecting that and understanding why we say it at the Seder, why Lashana Abab Yerushalayim Habnuya, and connect it to our Tikva. So I'll just share that one thing. So I found in doing research for it that there's articles, several articles written by Dr. Arden. Dr. Aaron Arend at Bar Ilan, where he talks about Hatikva and how Hatikva shows up in unusual places, like at the end of Yom Kippur after Lashana Abba, and also at the end of the Seder after singing Lashana Abba. And he actually referenced a custom in Jerba, Tunisia, where the Jews of Northern Africa were very had an affinity for Hatikva. Somehow it made it into the end of the Midrash Haggadah, which is a compilation of like 55 different Meforshim on the Haggadah, and that was written by Rav from Jerba. He was from late 1700s, early 1800s, and when it was printed, the editor in the 1900s added Hatikva at the very end of the Haggadah, and it became they accustomed for many years that they actually sang Hatikva at the end of their Seder after Lashana Haba. It turns out, read in the article, and maybe I put in the footnote, that it was actually a more maybe a misplaced minhag, and they realized after they saw the fuller version, the shorter version of Hatikva, which is what we sing on Yom in general, the national anthem for Israel, the fuller version of Hatikva had like 9 stanzas that that one was a little bit more religious in content, and it could be that was what they really had an affinity for. And when they saw that, it was changed to Liotam Chovshi Be'artzeinu, that some people didn't like that, then they kind of the custom fell by the wayside. But at least there was a connection to Hatikva and Lashana Abba Yerushalayim. You can read more about it in the article. And I guess thank you again. And Ezra Hashem is the end of Lashana Abba Yerushalayim. We should be zocher this year, not just Lashana Abba B'yad Bin Yamin, Lashana Abba Yerushalayim, but Lashana Abba Yerushalayim Habnuya. A hope and a prayer, Ezra Hashem.
Step next year in like a minute or two.